Hi, gang. Bob Bolving here. Welcome to the Mystery Project with Midnight Cab, written by James W. Nichols and starring David Ferry as Walker Devereaux. In this week, a puzzle where a mixture of innocence and lies stretches past the breaking point to thrash like a snapping cable with deadly viciousness at all within its reach. Midnight Cab, Episode 30, The Mystery of the Angry Sun.
Walker, where are you now? Walker. Walker? Walker, are you there? Walker?
Well, George, thank you for that. You're weird, George. That's okay. Our next reader, let's see. We have someone called Jake. Come on up here, Jake. Don't be shy. Here she comes. A big hand, ladies and gentlemen, for Jake. Hi.
Hi.
Jake.
Yes.
Is that a first name or a last name?
Yes.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the amazing, the riveting, the one and only.
Thank you. I'd like to read from something I call River Horses. Thank you. River Horses. Drifting down in my personal grief. Sun dancing on the river. Strips of leaves. I poked a stick at a man under the water. Mother said there's a time for everything and everything in its place.
July 16th. I first met her where? At Torch Publishing, four flights up Bathurst Street, the building hot as an oven. We were both looking for our manuscripts, me, my new novel I'd finally finished called Other Worlds, and Jigs, a collection of whatever it is she does, a cross between poetry and song lyrics called Hey, Who Moved the Tulip Bulbs?
You know what fascinates me? They not only reject your stuff, they always manage to spill coffee on it. See, I've got a coffee ring on page 29, and someone sputtered coffee on your title page.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi.
You don't suppose it's like a dog thing, do you? They have to mark it or something?
So we went into this little restaurant next door for a pop to cool off and to, like, commiserate. We had a lot in common. We were both writers, both unpublished. She worked at Kmart, I drove a cab. And in our secret hearts, we were both unsure whether our writing was really any good at all.
So this priest gets reassigned by his bishop. He doesn't know why. He's afraid to ask. It feels like he's being punished, but he doesn't know what for.
Kafkaesque.
Well, not really. So anyway, he ends up in this weird little parish beside the ocean. He's very lonely.
Mm-hmm.
Then his parishioners begin to disappear one by one. There's always someone missing at Mass. Houses are empty. Boats float back into shore with no clues. He begins to see monsters in the woods and dragging themselves out of the sea. He goes to talk to them. He falls in love with this married woman. Her husband disappears.
Wow, and?
Well, you know that poem, The Walrus and the Carpenter?
Lewis Carroll.
Yeah. The story's inspired by that, sort of. My wife thinks it's kind of deranged.
She doesn't like it?
No, she likes it. She just thinks it's deranged.
Let me read it. We can trade. You don't have to.
No. Sure.
So we traded, and I loved her writing. She'd lull you a little, then sneak up on you with some searing image. She was trying to find words to express the inexpressible, which, the way she saw the world, was almost everything. And, well, she really liked my new novel. And she wasn't just saying that to make me feel good, either. I could tell. So we began to meet every Tuesday afternoon at that restaurant to talk about our writing, our dreams. She told me that she'd been living in the city for 5 years and she felt lonelier now than when she first came. There's no subterfuge with Jake's. She just comes out and says it. And then she asked me to listen to her read that night. Amateur night at the Snake Pit.
There she goes, ladies and gentlemen. The fabulous Jake. A great big round of applause. Come on.
She came back through the crowd towards her table, long hair shining in the lights, her light summer dress making a fashion statement against her work socks and Doc Martin boots. her slow eyes and Slavic cheekbones all aglow with shyness and pleasure. I felt a rush of pride.
Yes.
Then she saw me standing at the back of the room and smiled, her glorious smile.
Walker, are you there?
Hello, Krista.
Hello. Where are you now?
On Queen Street at Bathurst, heading east.
Where have you been?
Where have I been?
I've been trying to raise you for the last 30 minutes. I didn't know whether to call the cops or what.
I don't think I was 30 minutes.
Yes, you were 30 minutes, Walker.
Oh, well, I just slipped into this club. It's called the Snake Pit, and people do readings in there of their stuff, you know, writers. And so, I was just curious.
Oh, yeah? Well, one, do not leave the cab again without signing off. Two, I was worried. And three, I'm sitting here at home dispatching my face off while you're lounging around in some Queen Street club? Do you think that's fair? Do you think I should be happy for you? I don't want to talk to you at all.
Krista hadn't been herself lately. Partly because Mr. Piatelli, our boss, is still in Vermont. She's worried about him because he's in a recovery program down there. And she's angry with him, too, because she thought she'd get to manage the cab company while he was away. However, it seems like the 51% of the company share she got as a gift from her father gives her control of the disposition of capital assets. But the day-to-day operations of the company are still in Mr. Piatelli. So, instead of letting Krista run things, Mr. Piatelli asked an old friend, Jack Mellon, to take a leave of absence from Diamond Cabs and manage things while he's away. More experienced, Mr. Piatelli said. This did not go over with Krista very well. And now she's sort of impatient with everything, the baby and me, but most of all with herself, her situation. In a wheelchair most of the time, crutches for short distances. I think she feels trapped. She fell in the backyard the other day and she threw one of her crutches right over the fence. So, I don't know. It didn't seem like the best idea to tell Krista about Jake's. I mean, it was just a friendship. There was nothing to it. We just liked each other's company because we shared stuff like writers share. That's all. But somehow, a week later, when I picked Jigs up at this library after another reading, I had this feeling. Krista might not understand.
Just instant.
That's what I always make if I'm making it myself. Thanks.
Black, right?
Right.
That was really nice. Giving me a ride home, I didn't expect you to show up.
Well, I was, I had a fare near there.
Oh.
It was terrific.
Oh, yeah? Everything you read or hear of mine, you say is terrific.
Well, it all is. Mad dogs don't bite. They just scare you to death. Jeez.
I don't like giving readings in libraries much. Everyone's so respectful and quiet. It's kind of creepy. Do you want me to put on some music?
Oh, I don't know. I should, probably get back to my cab.
Your wife has a nice voice.
Yeah.
Walker, where are you?
Yeah.
So where are you, Walker?
What do you mean?
I've been thinking about you. And Other World, your book. I've been wondering, how can you be so crazy in your head and live such a conventional life? Which one's true? And what do you really want? Don't you ever feel confused?
So there we were, just talking, sitting in Jig's room. She lives near Harvard in Ossington Avenue in an old brick rooming house. It probably used to be real nice, but now it's a bit run down. 7 rooms rented out and only 2 kitchens and 2 bathrooms. When something fell into my coffee. Jig's eyes went kind of wide. We both looked down at my coffee, then at each other, then another one, right into my coffee. We looked up at the ceiling. Like a huge pink rose, something was blooming above us on the scaling plaster.
That's blood.
Who lives up there?
An old lady, Mrs. White.
Come on.
Mrs. White? It's Jigs. Are you in there? Mrs. White!
Move out of the way. Come on.
Maybe it wasn't blood. Maybe it was cranberry juice or something.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. She spilt the...
What? What? Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Half hidden behind a couch on a scratched and painted pine floor, this woman looked up at nothing in particular, her snow-white hair bright red now, shimmering in a pool of blood.
Right in your coffee?
Yeah, it landed right in my coffee, and then when we got back down here, blood was splattering all over the table, too, from up there.
It's clean now. Who wiped it up?
Jiggs did while I called you.
With what?
A rag, a J-cloth, from the kitchen down the hall. That's where she is now. Then she got these pots to catch. See, it's still going.
So here you were, relaxing all alone with this young woman in her room.
Drinking coffee.
Well, you must have been quite a shock.
Yes, it was.
Inspector Kiss talked to Jiggs, too. She told him that Mrs. White stayed to herself most of the time, that, as far as Jiggs knew, she'd lived in those two rooms on the third floor for years, and that she had no idea why someone would want to fire a bullet into the back of her head.
You want a coffee?
No, thanks.
You want a smoke?
No, thanks. So who lives in the basement?
Why?
Because we've talked to everyone else.
Are you sure? Or just the legal ones? Who knows who lives here? Sri Lankans, Filipinos, Kenyans, there's an equal opportunity building.
Well, that's not my department. Let's just say someone came through every door except for the room down in the basement.
He's our token white male, Wentworth. I think he's paranoid.
What makes you think that?
Well, he puts scotch tape on all his food in the fridge and in the cupboard so he can tell if anyone's been tampering with them. He talks to himself a lot, and he gets very angry sometimes. Just last week I saw...
You saw him what?
I don't know. He was out in the back in the yard, what passes for the yard. He was looking up past my window towards Mrs. White's window, and he was shaking his fist and yelling.
It's almost 1 o'clock in the morning, Inspector Kiss. Maybe he is home.
Yeah, okay.
By this time, the manager of the house, a very upset, very fat, middle-aged man named Lewis Munn, had arrived. Jiggs had given Inspector Kiss his phone number, so we all trooped down into the basement. All except Jiggs, who suddenly started to shake. A policewoman wrapped a blanket around her, and we left her upstairs.
Here. I've got the key. Somewhere. I'm all thumbs. I'm so upset. Poor Auntie. It's this one. No, it's this one.
Take your time.
Mrs. White, she's with you?
Yes.
Is she?
Yes. I think this is the right one.
It was pitch dark in the room. The manager groped along the inside wall until he found the light switch, turned it on. The low-ceilinged, musty-smelling room was piled high with newspapers and magazines, and sitting in the middle of this mess at a chrome and arborite table was the token white male. There was some kind of document on a legal-sized paper spread out in front of him, and a gun with a silencer in his hand. But the three of us, and the young cop with us, weren't particularly afraid for our lives. The man's mouth was full of blood, and the side of his head had been blown away.
So we'll keep in touch, Walker.
Yeah.
Well, you've had quite a night, huh?
Yeah. So what do you think?
Well, that's a little early for that.
Looks like that guy killed her and killed himself.
Does it? Well, there's a couple of things you might want to sleep on when you go home to your wife.
What's that?
That document on the table, that was the old lady's will. Seems that she wasn't a tenant after all.
No, she owned this place. You're kidding?
No, I'm not. The manager confirmed it. Yeah, and the man in the basement, Wentworth, that's her son.
What?
Yeah. There's a trust fund set up for him. Says so right in the will.
So what do you think? He wanted the money in the trust fund. Maybe he wanted her to give it to him now. Jiggs said he was out in the backyard shaking his fist up at her window. And when she refused, he killed her. Then he felt bad, couldn't face what he'd done, and killed himself.
Yeah, well, it's neat. There's another interesting provision in that will, though. Guess who gets this big old house?
I don't know who.
Your friend, Jiggs. Say hello to Trista for me, will you, Kim?
Oh, Walker. That's awful.
I'm beat. I just want to go to bed.
God.
Yeah, two bodies in one night.
Did you see them both?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know how you could finish off your shift.
It just put everything out of my mind. I whipped Aldo. Ooh.
Walker? Mm-hmm. How did you, like, see the bodies in the first place? If they were inside the house, when you dropped your fare off, did you go inside the house?
Someone was standing on the porch screaming for the police. So I went inside the house.
Oh. That's just like you, you idiot. Well, go to sleep now.
Yeah.
And I was surprised how easy it was becoming to lie. Who was Jakes? What did I really know about her? And who was I, for that matter? Don't you ever get confused, she said.
Hello. You look a little strained there, Walker.
Yeah, well, I just came down here to say Jiggs couldn't have had anything to do with last night. I know she couldn't before you jump to any conclusions.
You're taking it upon yourself to be a character witness.
Well, yeah.
I see. Yeah, she gives me the impression of being a little out there, though, don't you think?
No.
I mean, even if it's run down, that house would be worth, what, $250,000?
Look, Inspector Kiss, Jiggs doesn't think that way. I know her.
Uh-huh.
All she thinks about is her writing, and I know what probably happened. Jiggs is kind, and she's alone, like, lonely. And Mrs. White was all by herself, too.
Yeah, well, Jiggs tells us Mrs. White's eyes were going bad, so she'd, read to her, they'd talk, she'd take her out for walks.
You see? And Mrs. White would know Jiggs was poor. I mean, she writes poetry, she works part-time at the Cameron.
So, I guess we're supposed to believe she willed the house to Jiggs in gratitude, and when her son saw the will and realized the house was going to Jiggs, he went even crazier than he was.
Yeah.
Murdered his mother, killed himself. Mm. Well, I admire the loyalty you're feeling, or whatever it is, towards this young woman, Walker. And, well, the truth is, the only fingerprints on the gun were Wentworth's. However, hey, you want a drink?
No, thanks.
No? However, just at the edge of the pool of blood under the table where Wentworth was sitting, there was just the smallest imprint of the toe of a shoe. You know? Small, ladylike shoe.
There was.
So this is what I think. Your friend didn't want to wait for the old girl to keel over. So as soon as she knew she was safely in the will, she bought a gun on the street and killed her. Then she killed Wentworth. Left the will on his table to provide motive and the gun in his hand to provide method.
But you don't know.
We took the liberty to search through your friend's room. And darned if we didn't find a blouse of blood on the sleeve hidden down in that couch you were probably sitting on. And in her closet...
The shoe.
Slipper, actually. Quiet her, I guess. See, she knew she'd stained her blouse. But she hadn't realized she stepped in blood, too. Sorry, kid.
Have you arrested her?
I'm waiting for the final reports from forensics.
Inspector Kiss. There's something not right.
Yeah? Your friend's a homicidal maniac. Anyway, listen, kid, I got...
About the blouse.
What about the blouse?
Well, why didn't she dispose of it? She'd have to have a plan. She couldn't count on killing two people and not getting any blood on her clothes. So why would she just leave it in her room?
Because nobody ever visited that old lady except her minister or the son either. They wouldn't be discovered for a while.
and it was more important for her to get out of the house and establish an alibi around the time of death. She could look after the blouse when she got back.
Then why did she ask me in for a coffee?
Maybe it gave her an extra little charge. She's...
Inspector Kiss, the blood. Why didn't she use the blouse to wipe up the blood?
What?
The blood. It was all over the table. She used a J cloth. If she's so smart, why didn't she solve her problem by using the blouse? I was on the hall phone calling you. She had plenty of time that way. She wouldn't have had to risk getting caught with incriminating evidence. Her blouse would have been covered with blood anyway.
No. It's the wrong blood, Walker. It's Wentworth's blood on that blouse.
It doesn't matter. You wouldn't test it. Not if she used it to wipe the blood off the table, would you?
Well, I don't know. Probably not. What are you doing now?
What's this stuff? Is that the will?
Yeah, it's another copy. It was one of the things stuck in the old lady's safety deposit box.
That note pinned to it. What's it say? One of three copies. One at the house. One to Lewis. Is that Mrs. White's handwriting?
Yeah, I guess so. What do you want? You want to look at my filing cabinets, too? You want to look at my desk?
No. Anyway, you're busy. I've got to go. And thanks, Inspector Kiss. Thanks a lot.
Is that Mrs. White's handwriting?
Why the hell would he ask that?
Little B. 8620, please.
Jeeves.
Walker! Just a sec.
I stood just inside the door at Kmart and tried not to look at her. At her cat eyes and high cheekbones. Modigliani face. Modigliani body, too. Slim and graceful under her Kmart uniform. And that other quality, long brown hair screening her face now. Mystery, distance, and solitude. Really not in that store at all. Moving through her own world. Dark and light.
Thanks. They took all my stuff. There's nothing left in my room at all. When they showed me that blouse, it was like they hit me in the face or something.
Yeah, it was yours.
Yes, it was mine. I don't know what to do.
Jakes, did you know before that Mrs. White was leaving you her house?
Yes, she even showed me the will. I didn't want her house. I told her that. What would I do with it? I've got a hot plate. I've got two pairs of boots. That's how I like it. And slippers. Oh, God, I'm scared, Walker.
I know. It's going to be okay.
It's like whoever's doing this to me, they're one step ahead. All the time.
I need to get into Mrs. White's room.
Why?
To search for something. I think I can help.
There's no way you can get in, Walker. They've closed the whole place off. It's guarded. The other tenants have been given special IDs. And I'm staying at the laundromat because I can't get back to my room at all. You'll never get in there.
Okay. Then I'll just have to ask someone I know for a very big favor.
I'll talk to you.
Walker.
Yeah?
Just thanks for hanging in with me.
Right.
Bingo.
What? You found it already?
Yeah, I did. Mrs. White's copy of her new will. It's inside her family Bible.
Oh, jeez.
Inspector Kiss, that's great. Way to go.
Yeah, well, if I didn't at least find it, I don't think I could live with myself since you figured it out.
Three copies of the will. This one to Lewis, and the one in the safety deposit box. Mrs. White said so in her own handwriting. And since they're the kind of wills you buy at a store and fill out yourself, it seemed logical to assume Mrs. White was the only one who knew there were only three copies.
Except for a minister who witnessed a signature, and he's hard as Jack the Ripper.
So, one in the safety deposit box, one at home, meaning here...
And the one she gave to Lewis, her manager, her nephew, and the executor of her will. Since they're right here.
So, if we have the safety deposit copy and Mrs. White's copy, where did the copy sitting on Wentworth's table come from?
Right.
From Lewis Munn, who just happens to have keys to all the rooms, including Jig's room. And am I relieved? Oh, man, am I happy.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Of course, he'll say he never received his copy. It's all circumstantial and it won't stand up in court. But, yeah, it's beautiful.
Inspector Kiss, Inspector Kiss, are you up there?
Speaking of which...
Yes, Mr. Munn, I'm up here.
Inspector,
my tenants are threatening to move. The inconvenience. Speed, Inspector. I would appreciate the utmost speed.
Yes, well, we'll see what we can do, Mr. Munn.
What he did was swing the focus of the investigation from Jiggs to Munn, who, as it turned out, was now Mrs. White's next of kin, and who'd eventually inherit the house, if only his luck held out. It didn't. A few days later, an illegal immigrant from Sri Lanka, who'd been living in the house, did the right thing and called the cops. He'd seen Munn watch Jiggs leave the house, and then he watched him sneak around to the house the back way. So, being illegal, he'd left the house too. He thought Munn was after him. It was the night of the murders. And Jiggs? We met on Tuesday again at that little restaurant, just like always. But we didn't talk so much. Not about writing, not even about Mrs. White or Wentworth or her being framed and not only getting her room back, but a whole house. It was like a terrible weight had been lifted from off our shoulders, and we were enjoying being together and just kind of staring at each other. So that's what we were doing, just staring at each other. And the temperature in that place went up like 20 degrees.
You have just heard The Mystery of the Angry Sun, episode 30 of Midnight Cab by James W. Nichol. David Ferry and Jacqueline Samuda were Walker and Krista. Stephanie Morgenstern was featured as Jiggs. You heard Neil Monroe as Inspector Kiss, with Lynn Donchef as Louis Munn, and Alon Nashman as the Master of Ceremonies. Music is by Milan Kinlicka, with casting by Linda Grierson. The recording engineer was Greg DeKloot, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. Our production assistant was Nina Callahan. Midnight Cab is produced and directed in Toronto by our executive producer, Bill Howell. For the Mystery Project, I'm Bob Bolting, inviting you back next week. The Mystery of the Desperate Men. Wednesday mornings on Morningside, Saturday here on the Mystery Project. Random sampling follows the news on most CBC stations, Finkelman's 45s, Maritimes, and Newfoundland. See you next week.